0800 80 10 80 to talk back with Murray Deeker on News Talk ZB. There's only one Deeker.
There are heaps of self-improvement books around. There's an industry in them. Some people buy one after another. Many of the ones that I've looked at are rubbish. Absolute and utter rubbish. In fact, I'll go further than that. Tripe would be how I would define them. So why are we having a self-improvement hour? And a self-improvement book is the feature of this hour, because this book is far from rubbish. This book is far from tight. This book is good stuff. This book is selling extremely well. In fact, there's a danger that the author may start to believe everything that he's written, and he becomes a guru then, and there's nothing more dangerous than a guru. But I don't think that'll happen to Dr. Kerry Spackman. The book, you've heard about it, because it's not only a sports book, even though the title would suggest that it's designed specifically for people discussing sport. It's called The Winner's Bible, but it is for the entire society. Like, the first person to read it in my house was the person least interested in sport, and she bought her own copy. So Sharon read it, and John has read it. John reads all of these, which is one of the reasons why I'm saying this, would suggest to me that perhaps some of them don't work, but hopefully Kerry Spackman's book will work. He's back in New Zealand after 7 years away, working with Formula One, particularly with McLaren. And when you delve around and ask behind the scene, you will find that Kerry Spackman has, in fact, dealt with and worked with a lot of people. Kerry, how would you differentiate between what you have written and the tripe that I'm saying is out there? It's all over the market, and there's heaps of it.
First of all, it's great to be here with you, Murray. You're a real legend in New Zealand, and it's a real pleasure to be here. You're absolutely right. There's an awful lot of books out there that are wishful thinking. They tell people ideas, which some authors come up with a great idea to make some money, and often they're damaging, and I really genuinely believe that. You know, if you only have to believe in this and you'll suddenly become a world champion, doesn't happen. My book, I never set out to write this book. I really didn't. I was working in a Formula One team, and one of the drivers had some issues, and I was asked to help him. And I said, look, you know, what have you been through? And he'd been through everything else. And I said, well, look, that doesn't seem to work, does it? So I said, let's see if we can start from the beginning. And my position that I started from was, let's see how the human brain actually works from a scientific point of view. Let's see what goes on inside a human brain, and then we'll see if we can match up what's going on inside your brain with what we know from science and come up with some solutions. So it was a very different approach. It's not that I set out to write it. It wasn't, I mean, these people are all highly motivated, so it wasn't about motivation. I mean, if you're a Formula One driver, you are motivated. And so it's all about understanding how the brain actually works.
And there's a major difference between this book and other ones, another major difference, in that many of the books that I've read would suggest to me that they're trying to develop one-dimensional robots who are aiming for success. This book is all about developing well-balanced people. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. And that is a real key to elite performance. It's a key to being successful and happy in life, but it's also, if you are asked to perform at world-class level, day in and day out, you have to have a solid platform. Sure, you can be a flash in the pan and pull out one good game from time to time if you're talented and you're motivated. But if you want to turn up, for example, and bang out 60 tests for the All Blacks, that's a pretty tough old business, travelling, all the things you have to do. So, and the level of competition has gone up enormously over the last 10, 15 years. It's a tougher game now. So to be at the top of your game, you have to have this robustness. And that's your whole psyche.
I like what you spell in this book, something that we overlook, that real champions just don't get there because of natural talent. They get there because they work their butts off. Take Carter, who again last night was so hugely successful. If you'd only worked with the All Blacks, how successful is Carter because of natural talent on the one hand and hard work on the other?
Well, he is very talented, as you know, but you're absolutely right. You know, his career's been fantastic, and he's had the odd little hiccup from time to time. But he's a hard-working, disciplined, focused individual. And if you look at the raw statistics, and this is something I did a little while ago, I looked at the statistics of people who have won Wimbledon. If you look at the junior Wimbledon players over the last 30 years, of the 30 women who had won junior, only three had gone on to win senior Wimbledon. Men, it's four. All the rest went nowhere. You look at Formula One, of all the junior karting champions, these are the most talented individuals, 15, 16. Again, it was four out of 24 years ended up in Formula One. The rest went nowhere. Now, what does that tell you? Raw talent alone isn't enough. Conversely, you take people like Navratilova, who as a junior was very average. She was slow, she was sluggish, she didn't have a good set of shots, but my goodness, what a work ethic. And if you look at her work ethic over the years and you see her improvement in performance, you can say sheer hard work counts for an awful lot. And I think today too many people think there's a shortcut there. And particularly if you're a very talented person at Fort, and I've come across this so many times with elite athletes, they may be really talented at 14 or 15. They may be really good, a little bit easy. Suddenly they get up into international level. Suddenly everyone else is talented, and they're hard workers, and they're not. So hard work, is just, you cannot underestimate it.
You see, you mentioned in your book that you hadn't appreciated properly until you lived with a champion athlete what it takes to become one. Now, from the story that you tell there, I presume that this is either a triathlete or an Ironwoman.
Yep.
Tell us what you witnessed day in and day out.
Unbelievable. So she was world duathlon champion, and she would wake up in the morning and she'd say, she'd get out of bed and she could hardly walk. This is a professional athlete. She would stumble across to the kitchen to make a cup of coffee, and she would walk like an old woman because she was so sore from the day before. And then she'd say, well, I'm off to the gym, the pool, I'm going to swim maybe 200 lengths. Now, these weren't like a length you and I would swim. Mm. Every single length, she gave her all, absolutely gave her all. And then after 200 lengths, a couple of hours in the pool, she'd come home, have something to eat, and then maybe an hour later, she'd go off and ride the bike. Now, this is in London, so the weather's miserable, there's a headwind, it's raining, it's horrible, and she'd ride 100K. Again, all out, hard, tough stuff. And at the end of that day, she'd then go for a 10K run, and probably a blistering time. Now, that level of effort, and of course, she'd wake up the next morning just as sore, just as painful, creaking out of bed. Now, I could probably do that for one or two days, Murray. At a stretch for a week. She did that for 15 years. 15 years, day in and day out. That's why she was world number one. And one of her favorite phrases to me was, I've never seen a shortcut yet in sport. Never seen a shortcut. Never found any magic bullets. It's all hard work. And that's what it took to be world number one.
We're talking with Dr. Kerry Spackman, and the book is called The Winner's Bible. It has already had a very big reception. Fourth reprint?
Fourth reprint in 3 months, yes.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know, you're to be congratulated on that, despite the fact, as I was saying to you before, I'm one of the people that has real reservations about publishers.
Yep.
They're gutless. They don't do enough to get in behind it. But you've got a guy right in behind us.
I was lucky enough to meet a billionaire who wanted me to do some work for him, and I said, oh, no, I'm actually writing a book. And he said, oh, send me this wretched book of yours. And I sent it to him. He said, oh, I really like that. He said, I own 300 companies. It's about time I set up a 301st, and I'll make a publishing company for you. So he's been fantastic, but I have to agree with you, Murray. Everybody else in the publishing industry are so negative. It's just like walking through treacle.
And frightened, scared stiff. Never seen anything like it.
Yep. Well, when I first came to New Zealand with this book, the distributor said, you'll be lucky to sell 600. I mean, that would be really, really good. And I said, well, we've just sent over 10,000 copies. The guy said, you're mad. He said, you'll never sell more than 600. Well, the first 10,000 went in about 4 days, I think. And but that's the attitude here.
Yeah. And yet not the attitude of the basic people, because
no. They're
buying the book.
Yeah, they're buying it. It's really, it's been a
Sharon's book club is all talking about it. Yeah, that's my gauge. Otherwise, yeah. I'd get as focused as the type of people that you're criticising, which yeah. I don't think, having watched sports people for a long time, sure, you need single minded focus at the top, but then there is an element where the very classy person
Absolutely.
At the very top has got something extra.
Absolutely right, Murray. Yeah, and we overlook that.
Tell me, how much can you say contractually about if I start asking you questions about Lewis Hamilton and McLaren's? Because you worked for them for how long?
About 6 or 7 years.
How far can we go down the path of Lewis Hamilton and not affect your contract?
Probably nowhere, really, because I have a pretty tight contract with McLaren that says pretty much everything I did there is bound by confidentiality.
How did they employ you? What were you employed as? What was the title they gave you?
Well, I think I was a bit of a mystery to everybody there. I was known as the brain guy, so I was employed as a neuroscientist. And one thing I can tell you is that McLaren, in its public knowledge, have built a very, very slick simulator. It's very good. And my job was to help make the simulator feel more real to the drivers. So it was built by British Aerospace, designed by McLaren. An absolute amazing piece of kit. But of course, a simulator can feel like a simulator, and the drivers have to actually feel like they really are at a racetrack.
Right.
And so the human brain has all sorts of tricks it uses to actually make you feel like you're moving through space. And because I understand those things, I was able to help put some of those things into practice and make the simulator feel real. And of course, you know, being known as the brain guy, and of course, previous to that, I'd worked at Stewart Grand Prix with Jackie Stewart, who's one of my all-time favorite people. And Jaguar Racing there, and that was also a great experience. So it's a little bit hard for me to say what I really was doing in there, because, you know, these are things that they do, they spend a lot of money on them. The budgets in Formula One are just ridiculous.
I think one of the most simple concepts that I'd like our listeners here to understand easily is the concept of rules versus tools. You see, it seems to me from reading your book, you believe in tools. Explain the difference.
Well, that's a really important question. Yes, a lot of self-help books have these little rules that if you just do this and just do that, you'll all of a sudden be a winner. And it doesn't work that way. So let's take an idea. Let's come up with a book called The 7 Ways to Beat Federer at Wimbledon. Okay? So we'll think of a rule. Rule number one. Hit the ball where Federer can't get it. That's a pretty good rule. If I always hit the ball where he's not going to get it, I'm always going to win. That's a great rule. But the question is, how on earth do I do that? And so a lot of self-help books give you rules. Be positive. Well, how do you be positive if your partner's died? It's not as simple as that. You need tools to do that. And just like Federer can't just hit the ball where I can't get it just because he has this idea. He has to practice. He has to use tools. So for me, changing your brain and changing your whole approach to life is more than just a simple rule. You've actually got to go through a process, a program. You've got to do things, just like Federer has to practice his backhand hour and hour and hour. You have to analyze what's going on in your life. So, as an example, one of the things I get people to do is to get them to have an audit of themselves. What do other people think about you? As an example, an anonymous audit. And that's been fascinating for people to do that. And they realize, gosh, I've failed through life, and I didn't realize X about me, and it's really hurt me, for example.
Where'd you get that idea?
I don't know, Murray.
You don't know why I'm grinning like this, do you?
Sorry?
You don't know why I'm grinning about this.
No, I don't know.
Well, I will tell you. And I do something. There is an organization which is also has a huge amount of anonymity about the organization,
okay,
which I happen to be a member of. And that organization makes people go through an audit process.
Right.
And the audit process is to write it down yourself first,
mm-hmm,
and then to discuss it with another human being, and then to do something about the things that you're discussing. The audit process is not only to look at the things that you're bad at, but the things that you're also good at.
Yeah.
And then you take that and you move forward. But it's like almost the taking of an inventory and a cleaning, and then a cleaning out, and leaving that, you know what, behind you, and getting on with the job.
Yep. Well, see, for us, or for me, I totally agree with that process. So we encourage people to think about themselves, strengths, weaknesses, common mistakes, things that you repeat over and over again, but also to think of really unusual things that you may not be aware of. And so what we try and do with we've got a little software program on the web, you can go on there, and the idea is that your closest friends that you can invite. They can leave things anonymously for you to tell you. It's only your friends you invite, only the people you want. Mm. And the idea there is, like, if you ask me, Murray, what do I think is wrong with you, for example, it's going to be very difficult for me to say that to you face-to-face because I care so much about the relationship I have with you if you're a friend of mine. So having it sort of anonymous, I think, is important, but you have to put in a real good structure to protect that so only the right people leave it there for you.
We're talking with Dr. Kerry Spackman. The book is called The Winner's Bible. Now, there will be a number of people listening to this program who have already read it, and there may be some aspect of it that you would like to discuss with him. You can ring him now on 0800 80 10 80. There may be others who, in a program like this, which concentrates so much and hears so many people talk about mental toughness, they want to ask questions about that. This is the area that he specializes in, and this is your opportunity to talk to an expert who has worked with all the top people. Our number, 0800 80 10 80, 0800 80 10 80. There are clear lines there, and you'll get through right now.
Radio Sport. You're listening to Zika on Sunday. Around the country, around the world. If it's sport, it's on Scoreboard. Radio Sport.
The book is out. It's called The Winner's Bible, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change. Dr. Kerry Spackman, the author, is with us this hour, and he's taking your calls right now. Peter, your comment or question for Kerry?
Yeah, Kerry, hi. I've read your book, and it's fantastic. I've got my own Winner's Bible now. I use it every day. Now, I see your book being a great tool for leadership development, and although you'll have a worldwide following, I'd be really interested to know what you might do to help the development of leadership in New Zealand. At the moment, I teach leadership at a polytech. There's a New Zealand Diploma of Business paper on leadership, and that requires a sort of a personal development plan, and I'm using your book now. Some of the students are doing the audit. So, how can we get you working with us here in this country to...
Peter, lovely to have you bring in, and very good question. I guess my problem at the moment is I've been almost overwhelmed by people wanting my help, and this is where I think people like yourself and organisations that are already very good organisations in New Zealand, we can work alongside them. I think my job is really to put together some intellectual ideas, some properties, some ideas that people like yourself can then take, package them up and use them to help people, for example, in the leadership area. So I'd welcome working with you, and it would be a great opportunity.
And Kerry, you're back here now permanently.
Yes, just moved back and just bought a house in Kumeu, actually, so I'm really looking forward to being back in New Zealand. So I would you know, really want to get amongst helping a number of people. And one of the things is leadership. That's absolutely crucial. Another one is in schools, where I think a lot of school children go through the school system. They may learn Pythagoras, they may learn some technical skills, but they don't learn life skills. And I know it's all a bit touchy to talk about these sort of things, but I genuinely believe we need to give people life skills as well. So that's another area I'm passionately interested in for New Zealand.
The difficulty is that you're very practical in all your suggestions. Most of the touchy-feely people don't want to be practical because they don't even want to be evaluated. You're always keen on... This book is full of evaluation and self-evaluation and evaluating other people, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's how
you
get
that going to go over in New Zealand? I left an education system because nobody wanted to be evaluated.
It's the only way forward. I mean, you imagine playing a game of rugby where you never got the score.
Oh, but we've had netball, Kerry, where we don't keep the score for kids.
it never works. You know, I'm sorry, but that's life. Life is a tough old game. Nature red in tooth and claw.
Jason, your question or comment, please.
Murray, first of all, I belong to the same club that you do, and that self-evaluation is probably one of the hardest things you've ever had to do, but it's also a blessing. Kerry, I'm lucky enough to have two children that represent their country at national and international level and has been very successful. That one's a junior world champ. And I smiled to myself when I heard there were no shortcuts in sport, because I've heard other people comment to me, aren't they lucky? There's no luck involved at all, because I watched the training. I'm lucky enough to be able to share, and they let me share in their successes. But their training, the depth of training, the depth of hard work that they have to put in to achieve is just something that I can't reiterate to anyone who's listening, that it is all about the work. Yes, I've got talent. waste of talent if they actually didn't go out and work. And lucky enough, they went through a scoring system where the schools definitely encouraged the children to work very, very hard and identified kids with talent and drove them and identified that each child does have talent and found that talent and really worked it and then weren't embarrassed to put those children on a pedestal and the rest of the school could look at them and were encouraged to emulate their successes. So I just, again, wanted to say that it is hard work and...
Jason, can I interrupt you and ask you this? Name the schools, will you?
Sacred Heart College,
yep.
And Barrington College.
Was Jim Dale principal of Sacred Heart at that time?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Well, you see, he did the same thing at Westlake, and although he's not principal at Westlake at the moment, I looked at the Westlake results the other day, because it takes a while for results to come through, and they've just absolutely cleaned up in sport. The achievement of Westlake Boys High School this year has been amazing, and the Jim Dales of this world... in education, these are the people we should be honouring because they've stood out like sore toes in a mess of mediocrity and egalitarianism. I love Jim Dale.
Oh, Jim Dale's outstanding. Just to hear him speak,
yep.
And to motivate the boys are just, they're quiet and listening, not because they're scared of Jim, and he's a bit scary, but because they respect him and what he has to say.
There's a similar guy, Jason, on Auckland's North Shore who's been there for 100 years running a strange little school who I've got huge regard for. His name's Tom Girard. Now, these gems in our society should be celebrated, shouldn't they, Terry?
Absolutely, and yet we tend to knock them down. We tend to criticise them for daring to stand up, and, you know, Jason has just come on and he's spoken quite eloquently about the effort that's required, and obviously, you know, he is aware of this whole process of hard work, auditing yourself, as we talked about, and, you know, he's obviously a great asset to his family and a tremendous result.
Mark, g'day.
Murray, just a quick question. Is this Jim Dale the Scotsman?
Yeah.
Murray, Jim taught me when I was a young boy at Rosehill College before he went on to greater and better things at these more prestigious schools. Just a quick thing. I was caught out taking the mickey out of Mr. Dale when I was a little boy, imitating his Scottish accent.
Yes.
Murray, it's a lesson I never forgot. I turned around and he was standing behind me. And I must thank Jim for giving me the opportunity to grow as a sportsman and as a young man. He put me in my place quite firmly after that and kept his eye on me so I wouldn't misbehave, and absolutely that was what I needed.
I guess what we're talking about here, and we're throwing in the names of, you know, a couple of pretty well-known principals and Tom Girard and Jim Dale, we then widen that out, and coaches are the same. These are the people that you need who have strong, firm ideas and give good leadership at the top, and they assist and are certainly a significant part of what you're talking about in your book, The Winner's Bible.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, just talking about schools, I don't know about yourself, Murray, but I remember very vividly, I'm an ex-school and grammar boy, you know, the teachers that absolutely stood out and who had a very strong impact on you, they may have only said one or two words to you at the time, but 20, 30, 40 years later, they're making an impact on you.
You, in the Winner's Bible, you talk about the personal Winner's Bible. It's something that you feature in the book. We're going to run out of time on this show, so tell us about what it is and how visualization features as a concept within it.
Yes, this is something that Peter mentioned when he rang in, that he's got his own personal Winner's Bible going. So one of the things I get people to do is make a little folder, it's an A5 folder, and it puts, first thing you put in there is what your goals are, visual images of your goal. So, for example, just saying, I want to have a boat, doesn't tell me anything. If I can actually taste that, see that, feel that, then it's probably going to be much more powerful. But it's easy having a wish list of things. Mm. You also have to say, what am I going to do to get there? So there's important things we talked about, like your family and your friends. These round out you as a person. You also have to have in there your weaknesses, things that you need to work on a day-to-day basis, your strengths, the things that you want to make use of every day. You also need to have almost like a business plan, Kerry Inc., as it were. If I'm a business, what is my business? So my business is divided up into parts. There's my health. Okay, need to attend to that. It's almost like different divisions of my life. There's my work. There's my family. There's my recreation. So So it's a little folder that you look at each day, and you can flick through it. You don't have to read the whole folder, but as you just quickly flick through it, certain things will start you off on the right way for that day. And it's a very simple concept, but it's the execution that's the key.
Yeah.
And I started, in fact, that's how the book got its name, The Winner's Bible, is because many, many years ago, I was working with this Formula One driver, and the first thing I said to him is, look, I'm going to make a little folder for you, it's going to have your name on it, and it's going to be called X's Name, Winner's Bible. And I'm going to put in it the things I want you to look at every single day, every day. And he said, oh, that'll never work. You know, he said, that's never going to work. Funnily enough, a year later, I was driving through London, phone call. Hey, Kerry, how you doing? I said, oh, nice to hear from you. He said, well, just want to tell you, it's day 365, and I haven't missed using my Winner's Bible every day.
Mm, mm.
So it worked. Yeah.
And it does. And, there are a lot of parallels between this particular book and the 12-step program that millions of people around this world institute in their daily living to get them through one day at a time.
One day at a time. Yes, if you do each day well, the next time's better.
Back with your calls, 0800 80 10 80. We're discussing The Winner's Bible, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change. Dr. Kerry Spackman is here. It is the book you buy for Christmas. We're talking with Dr. Kerry Spackman. His book is out. It's called The Winner's Bible, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change. It has sold extremely well, and if you've been listening to this hour, you would know why it sold well. Before we go back to our border calls, I want to talk a bit about something in the book, Loretta's story.
Mm.
This is about the Australian triathlete Loretta Harrop and her reaction to taking tests from the Australian Institute of Sport.
Yeah.
It's motivational and inspirational, isn't it?
It's an incredible story, and this was told to me by my girlfriend, who we just mentioned before, the triathlete. They used to train together, and Loretta wrote this little note for us. And the story is really quite amazing. So Loretta wanted to be a triathlete, and she wanted to get some funding. So in Australia, she had to go to the Australian Institute of Sport and get measured. And they put her through all these tests, you know, what's her VO2 max, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of all the tests, they said to her, sorry to say, but we're not going to fund you. You're not even average. You're below average. And they said, you know, we know these things. We're the experts in this. We know what it takes to be a champion. You know, go and do something else, you know, crocheting or something. And Loretta's attitude was, I don't care about your damn stupid tests. I'm going to be a champion. And so, to cut a long story short, she then trained her butt off for years and would come 40th, and then 30th, and then 20th. Now, I don't know about you, Murray, but if someone like the Australian Institute of Sports had told me that I was no good and I had no potential and I worked my butt off for 3 years and I'm still coming 40th, I'd probably have given up. Not Loretta. She went on to win silver at Athens in the triathlon. And probably could have won gold, actually. She thought she was well ahead and slowed down, and the person passed her just before the finish line, and she thought it was a person she'd already lapped on the final lap. So she probably would have got gold. But here's a woman who was tough and just refused to give in. Hard work.
Mm.
Never give in.
Graham, your question, please.
Oh, thank you very much indeed. Good afternoon, Kerry.
Hi, Graham.
I was watching the BBC just recently, and they mentioned the promotion of an audit on oneself. Now, the part that intrigued me was they called it tribal management system. Can you elaborate on that?
No, I don't know anything about that at all, I'm afraid. So, no, can't help you there at all.
Oh, okay, then I'll just write out.
No.
So just to revisit your system of personal audit for people listening, what is it again?
So what you do is you invite as many friends as you like. You have to have at least four. They will then leave their comments on a special place on the website just for you. No one else will see it. You only get to see their comments when at least four have left them. This is a way of assuring anonymity. So you don't know who left which comments, but you're also triggered to leave them in a way that is very helpful for you. So we don't want just the normal sort of things, you know, he's a nice-looking guy. That's not going to help anybody. So we help both the person auditing and also the winner, the person being audited, how to deal with these things.
You talk about motivation in this book, and I'm interested in what motivates you. You talk about, in the book, your relationship with your father and your grandfather. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Two exceptional individuals. I'll start with the easy one first. My grandfather, that was very easy. Just an extraordinary man, the Honourable Sir Trevor Henry, High Court Judge of New Zealand. One of the most intelligent men I've ever met. Just an absolutely delightful person. My father was also an incredible man. He was very driven, very motivated, loved us enormously, absolutely no doubt about that. But as a youngster, I felt more the sort of discipline and motivation from him rather than the love behind it. There was always love there, but I just felt that constant drive. But then,
how did you react to that?
I became very sort of goal-oriented, very one-dimensional, very almost clinical as a person. Then my father unfortunately had a heart attack, nearly died. And after that event, he rounded out this incredible drive and discipline with the most compassionate love, the most, he was just the most amazing person. So I felt like I had two fathers. Both were very valuable for me. So the first father I had instilled in me this drive for success, which he really had. You know, he was a very successful person. The second father, the same person, of course, but sort of mellowed a bit, gave you this passion and compassion for people. And it was a really interesting process.
I don't want to ruin the end of the book for people, but I want to...
I was trying to not tell you about that.
About your grandpa's cottage and the significance of that for people listening today.
Well, yes, that is the end of the book, and I hope I don't ruin it for everybody. I had the most amazing time many, many years ago down at Albert Town and down the South Island, beautiful area there, staying with my grandfather. And I haven't been back there for close on 40 years. And in the middle of those 40 years, I've been through some very tough times, Murray. I'd had some times when I was particularly sad, particularly lonely, many, many terrible things, personal things. And out of the blue, I went back to where my grandfather had this little cottage on the banks of the Clutha River. Just after I'd finished writing the book, I'd actually finished the book and put on, just need a holiday. I went down to Queenstown, caught a hot air balloon, we flew up over the air, and I looked in the distance, and there was Albert Town. I thought, I must go back. So I went back to Albert Town, and the person said to me, who was taking us up on the boon, oh, you know, it's all changed now. Your grandpa's little cottage will be gone. Everything will be gone. But I went back there, and all the buildings had changed except one. There was this one little cottage left on the banks of the Clutha River, completely unchanged since I was there. And I just walked up to this little cottage, and a lady came to me and said, would you like to come in? And I said, I can't believe this cottage is still there after all these years. And she said, I bought this place, and something said I couldn't change it. And for me, going back there and seeing the beginning of my life and this now later stage of my life and everything that was in the middle, it suddenly put it all in perspective. It made you realize what is really the value of life. Sure, you can get a gold medal. Sure, you can win a prize. But there's more to life than that. And so when I talk about being a winner, I don't just mean being a champion. So for me, Mike Tyson is a champion. He was a heavyweight champion of the world, but he's not a winner. He ended up in jail. He blew $500 million. So for me, when I talk about a winner, it's a person who wins in life, not just to get the gold medal.
The book is called The Winner's Bible, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change, is the subtitle. We're with Dr. Kerry Spackman. Sean, your question for Dr. Kerry Spackman.
Yes, Murray. Dr. Spackman, it's powerful stuff to hear you speaking. I won't keep it long. I just have a question. Do you find that certain people attract, do you find yourself other people's difficulties in life, and like you don't intend to go seeking them, they come to kind of on your doorstep?
I think it's very simple, Sean. Sometimes bad things happen to good people, and good things happen to bad people. I think that's just the nature of life. But I also think some people make bad decisions, and those bad decisions constantly cause a chain of events. So it's hard to know. It's a combination.
Jeffrey, yours, please.
Kerry.
Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon. I've been reading every now and then a book that I picked up in 1982, which has helped me. I'm also part of a particular fellowship of men and women who do things anonymously. This book is called Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain. And she suggests in the book that you can transform your... Oh, mind you, this is an adjunct to a 12-step program that I work on every day. And she says that you can... Or I use it as an also to this 12-step program. And
could your book be used that way, Kerry? I think it's where Jeffrey's going.
I think it could be. It's an adjunct. It would be great to help.
Yeah, good stuff. Nice to hear from you, Jeffrey. And the book is called The Winner's Bible, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change. But The Winner's Bible, have you got it all around Auckland and New Zealand?
Yes, it's in all the bookstores now.
All the bookstores. Just go in there. Dr. Kerry Spackman's book, The Winner's Bible.